All right, good friends, welcome on a St. Patrick's Day, March the 17th. Welcome to INN World Report Radio. I just wanted to throw that out, being that my last name is Kiley. This is Tom Kiley of INN World Report Radio. We come to you 5 days a week right here in this time slot, 4 until 5 p.m. Central Time. And this is a St. Patrick's Day program, probably about in name only, because I'm... Here, let me do something Irish for you. Saints be praised, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. Okay, there you go. I'm in a bit of the spirit, heaven imbibed. Okay, but here in New York City, it's a tradition. The oldest parade in, at least in New York City, maybe in the country, but it's a very old parade down Fifth Avenue, and I was just up in the publishing district here on Fifth Avenue, and the aftermath of the parade, lots of people walking around wearing green and so forth, and funny wigs and things like that. So anyhow, happy St. Patrick's Day to all of you out there, whether you're Irish or not. And it's just a sort of a nice occasion. And we've got a great program lined up for you today. Ambassador Edward Peck has been a friend of the program, has been on my evening show and on our television program. But I think this is the first time we have the pleasure of bringing him to you, the afternoon audience. Ambassador Peck is a retired career United States diplomat who served 32 years in the U.S. Foreign Service, and he was the chief of mission in Baghdad, Iraq, 1977 until 1980. And he held senior posts in Washington and abroad, and served as a foreign officer in Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, and Egypt. And so he's got a great deal of experience in that part of the world. So I asked him to come on. Always a good bet to check in with Ambassador Peck from time to time. Just a real gentleman as well. Lots of fun to talk with. And I wanted to have him on, friends, to talk about the story that I was telling you about yesterday from the Scottish newspaper about all these bunker buster bombs being transshipped to Diego Garcia in the Indian Ocean. It's a British possession, but they let us use that island. And it's very similar to the weapons buildup that happened before, just prior to the invasion of Iraq. So it is said that these weapons are destined ultimately for Iran, bunker busters, weapons that are supposedly capable of penetrating deep beneath the earth. So I thought we would have Ambassador Peck on to talk about that. He'll be joining us in just a few minutes. And I'll open up the phone lines right now, if you'd like. Feel free to call us, 866-582-9933, 866-582-9933. Let us know how St. Patrick's Day is going for you in your part of the country. That would be nice to hear if you'd like to talk about that. Of course, there's open phones. We can talk about anything. And I would like to talk maybe about St. Patrick, from what I know about St. Patrick. And I can't get the dates exactly right anymore. I used to be able to do that. Maybe I can look it up for you on Wikipedia for the dates while we're talking about it. But as far as I know, St. Patrick was a Roman who lived in Britain. Okay? Let me see if I can find this in the Wikipedia, the dates. He was a Roman who lived in Britain around 387, it looks like, A.D. Okay, and from 387 A.D. to March 17th, hence St. Patrick's Day in 493. He was a Romanized Celt and a Romano-Briton. So he lived in Britain. And as far as I know, I read a biography some years back. He apparently was kidnapped in Britain and taken across the Irish Sea to Ireland, made a slave over there. There were apparently, it was fairly common for raiding parties to come from Ireland over to Roman Britain, and he was taken in one of these raids, and he spent some time as a slave in Ireland. And some of the story seems to be a little bit mythological, but I believe he escaped his slavery and somehow, in a very roundabout way, made it to Rome, I think. I'm not sure about that, but apparently he got quite an education, Christian education at the time, and eventually returned to Ireland. And his return was heralded. And apparently because he knew the Irish from having been living there as a slave, he went in there with a Christian mentality. As you know, it was Celtic. You know, the Druids were the religious figures of the place. A lot of magic and superstition and so forth. And because he knew the Irish so well, I guess he took it on himself to be a missionary, to go back there, speak their language, and teach them Christianity. And apparently he was quite successful at it. And as a result, the word spread about him. And now it's not entirely clear whether he encouraged this kind of talk or not either. But as the word spread about him because of his powerful oratory and his ability to convert so many people, they thought that he had some kind of magical powers and that his God was more powerful than theirs or something to that effect. And his legend preceded him, and word got out that he was coming and so forth. And as I understand it, it got to the point where the chieftain who had kidnapped him, St. Patrick wanted to go to meet him. And I believe he wanted to go to meet him to try to convert him to Christianity. And the chieftain heard he was coming and heard all these fantastic tales about his ability to conjure up spirits and demons and so forth, and he was frightened. And the legend has it that the chieftain who had captured him and held him as a slave for so long thought that St. Patrick was going to be coming to kill him, and he was in fear for his life, I guess, and apparently he committed suicide over the deal, threw himself onto a fire or something. That's how the story goes. Anyway, that's what I know about St. Patrick. How about somebody giving me a call to add to that, or correct me if I'm wrong. 866-582-9933. 866-582-9933. Just a kind of an interesting story. I tend to try to find out more about historical figures, particularly those that we know about. I believe Saint Valentine, the saint that Valentine's Day was named after. It's my understanding, again, now I might not be totally correct on this or even remotely correct, but as I understand it, Valentine was an early Christian priest who, when Christianity was outlawed, or when the marriage rites at least were outlawed in ancient Rome, would marry young Christian couples or Christian couples in secret. And so he became the go-to guy for people who wanted to be married. And, presumably maybe there was some love involved. That's a whole story as well. The love marriage being a relatively modern phenomena, at least in our culture. And that would be interesting. Maybe we'll get a sociologist or somebody or an anthropologist to come on and talk about that sometime. But in any case, St. Valentine, somebody who married married Christians who wanted to be married because it was illegal, and paid the price. I think he was found out and was killed. So his martyrdom ends up in another one of the days that that is on the calendar and celebrated in a rather, I would say, commercial way. But that's my understanding of those days. Anyhow, we're going to be joined on the other side of this break by Ambassador Edward Peck. Just a great guest, friends. First time here on the afternoon show, so stay tuned. I'm sure you're going to enjoy hearing from Ambassador Peck. We'll be right back with Ambassador Edward Peck just after this.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Going back to the time of old, on the free out of the mountain home, on the hills of our land of room, to the bankrupt land of you. Steel cap, steel sun, deep breath, all the stories that were told, I've seen them, never wanted to know.
right, good friends, welcome back. This is Tom Kiley, INN World Report Radio, 5 days a week right here on the great GCN Radio Network, 4 until 5 p.m. Central Time, where we bring you what we like to think of as the news the networks won't tell you. And that's what we're going to be doing today. It's a great pleasure to welcome back to INN World Report Radio on the daytime show, however, for the first time. I'm going to introduce you all now to Ambassador Edward Peck, former ambassador, retired now, but had served as chief of station in Iraq in, I think, what was it, in the 70s, correct, Ambassador? Ambassador Peck, is he there? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. I was just saying to the audience that you served as chief of station in Baghdad back in the 70s, correct?
Well, yes, except that it was chief of mission. The station is the CIA guy.
I didn't mean to tell everybody about your other job.
I was in charge of him, so he...
Well, anyway, welcome back to the program, Ambassador. We've had you on the evening show, but this is your first time here on the daytime show. How are things for you these days?
Well, they're quite busy, actually, you know, with all the things going on in the Middle East. And you can always refer to me as a Middle East expert, and I feel comfortable saying that because, unlike most Americans, I know where it is, which is a key point.
You know, back in the run-up to the first Gulf War, now that you mentioned it, it was amazing. CNN, I guess they felt like they had to show some kind of balance. So they had Christopher Hitchens on to talk about the coming war in Iraq, the first one after the invasion of Kuwait.
Yeah.
And they paired him up with none other than Charlton Heston.
Really?
Yeah, and he was angry, Hitchens, and I could see why. And he says, "For crying out loud, you got me sitting here next to Moses." And Charlton Heston's going, "Well, we should bomb them, and we should do this, and we should do that." And he says, "Do you know the five countries that surround Iraq, Mr. Heston?" He says, "Don't you think you at least should know where these people are that you're talking about bombing to death?" So, to your point, I didn't mean to sidetrack too much.
No,
yeah, I would like to talk about, if you don't mind, a couple of things. I read this story in the Scottish paper, The Herald, there a couple of days ago. It came out about the transshipment of special bunker buster bombs to Diego Garcia, presumably marked for Iran, being sent forward in position to be used there to presumably get deep in the ground against some underground targets where I guess they're working on nuclear whatever, number one. Number two, also, if we could save some time to talk about this latest flap going on between Israel and the Obama State Department.
Oh, I like the way you put that, the Obama State Department. All right, go ahead.
Well, I mean, I'm not quite sure how else to put it, but anyway, let's talk about Iran first. You know, that seems to have calmed down somewhat. We had Barack Obama come in a little more than a year ago now, and, you know, everybody was so happy to see somebody with who they thought was going to be a more sane voice, that right off the bat the guy wins the Peace Prize, you know, who'd have thunk it and everything, and he was calming down the tone with Iran. And I think people sort of began to breathe a sigh of relief. But now things seem to be slipping backwards. Do you care to comment on that? Can you tell us from your perspective how things are looking?
It's an interesting thing. You know, this is why I travel a lot and these days, and it's always fascinating to me to run into people who are, like yourself, you know, logical, reasonable, asking an open-ended question. And they say, "How can you Americans run around as you do, bellowing and snorting about how everybody needs to talk, to dialogue in order to solve problems, but you don't do it, you Americans?" And I said, "Well, that is called," you may quote me, "that is called dynamic hypocrisy." And everybody practices it in the home, you know, in the workplace, because we just had a situation, if you saw that in the paper, where the British are thinking very seriously about beginning to pump for oil down there in what they call the Maldives,
right?
And what the people in Argentina called, you know, the Falkland Islands,
right?
Vice versa. Sorry. Anyway, they turned to the Americans for help, and they said, "Would you please come and, you know, be intermediaries for us?" And the Secretary of State's reply was, "We think it's far more important if you guys talk to each other." Oh, well, there's a concept that you don't apply yourselves. How in the world can you aim it at us? Well, because it's good if you do it, but we ain't gonna.
Do as I say and not as I do.
Well, yeah, but everybody does this, but we do it very openly, very blatantly, you know, very very powerfully and very repetitively, all of which is bad things, I think, because it gets people's backs up. So if
I may for 1 second, Ambassador,
sure.
Now I had a guest on not too long ago speaking of Central and Southern America, saying that we're reactivating, I think it was the 8th Fleet or the 5th Fleet, that used to patrol that part of the world, and we're starting to reactivate it. And they said implicitly because there's a lot of oil being discovered. There's oil off of Cuba, off of Haiti, and maybe the situation in the Maldives as well. I don't know if you heard anything about that.
No, I had not. And it's always difficult to guesstimate what it is exactly that the military is up to because, you know, they've always had, and they have to have, they should have, contingency plans for everything. You know, for anything to happen, they've got to have a contingency plan for it. And everybody should be able to understand that, but a lot of folks don't. It's a situation in which they used to have a, not a, so much a fleet, but they used to have people who used to patrol down there and take these cruises around the area, visiting ports, you know, goodwill cruises, that sort of thing. And everybody thought it was a very good idea. And it was people's contacts, and they got to speak to the people in the other navies and all the rest of that. So if they're starting it up again, it would be, in my mind, nothing more than a reactivation of a program that we used to have for many, many years and which everybody thought was a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I would see it. I don't know. But just because they're going to find oil there, that that wouldn't by itself, in my mind, you know, generate a whole new fleet.
Yeah, but I think, it's, like I said, it was a reactivation. This is, I'll have to go back and verify that. I shouldn't be shooting from the hip like that. In any case, why don't we get back to another part of the world where your area of expertise is welcome on this program. About Iran, I mean, actually, we're heading into a break. But when we come back, if you could give us a timeline of the last 2 years and, you know, up and down with the rhetoric, where you would position us right now. Are we heading down? Are we heading back up again? That sort of thing. Friends, we're speaking with former Ambassador Edward Peck, a welcome guest on the program, first time here on the daytime version of INN World Report. We'll be right back with Ambassador Peck just after these messages.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Good friends, welcome back. This is Tom Kiley, INN World Report Radio, right here on the great GCN Radio Network, Monday through Friday, 4 until 5 p.m. Central Time, and we endeavor to bring you news the networks won't tell you. And that's the kind of guest that we have for you today. We're speaking with former Ambassador Edward Peck. Always a pleasure. A happy informational warrior, if you ask me. Always get information that's very interesting and delivered with grace and style. So then, Ambassador Peck, before the break, I was asking you, could you, in your own, from your point of view, in the, say in the last 2 years, and maybe, yeah, well, if you could go on a scale from 1 to 10, 1 being really bad, 10 being euphoric, happy, up and down our rhetoric and the possibility of actually going to war with Iran over the last year or two, and where you would put that on that scale today, and heading up or heading down?
Well, I'm afraid it's heading up. There's an awful lot of people who, you know, if getting into politics just very gently here, there is a certain tendency for the party in out of power to do whatever it can to disrupt the efforts of the party in power. you know, because that's how you get back in the saddle if you've lost out or something. So whatever Mr. Obama was up to, if there were any bumps in the road, understandably and, you know, perfectly reasonably, the Republicans would jump on it because they felt that that was in their interest, however much it may actually have been. So Obama held out a branch, an olive tree branch, to say, hey, guys, let's see if we can't loosen things up here a little bit, or at least part way. And what he ran into, and that was kind of predictable, was the fact that the Iranians have some rather bad memories of their earlier associations with us, as you may be aware. And, you know, look with something resembling suspicion, can we say, as to just exactly what exactly it is that the Americans are up to. We have gained a reputation for ourselves over the last some years of people who have nefarious plans for other countries, which other countries may not themselves think are such a great idea. And we've done this before, and we may even wind up doing it again in other places. But they don't like it. They think it's unfortunate. And the Iranians remember that we did some pretty bad things to them back in the days when the Shah was around. You remember some of this, I think.
Oh, yeah. When we trashed, you know, everyone, we're going to Iraq to install democracy. That was the third excuse after, you know, they did 9/11 and weapons of mass destruction didn't work. But they had democracy in Iran in 1953, and
yeah,
that had to be knocked out.
We took care of that. And just, you know, the business of democracy, this is related to what we're talking about. I was an election observer in Gaza in 2006 when the Palestinians had their parliamentary elections. And during the course of that day, met with and spoke with Fatah leaders and Hamas leaders and all of that. And as you know, Hamas won. And America said, nope, sorry, you guys. You didn't choose the people we wanted. And you say, well, wait, it's a free and fair democratic election. Yeah, that's true. But you didn't pick the guys that we wanted. Do you understand? Do you get the message here? Because democracy is a difficult thing to deal with. You have to be prepared. This is so social scientist speaking. You have to be prepared to consider the possibility that you might lose.
Can I ask you very briefly, Ambassador?
Yeah,
you were there.
Sure.
In your opinion, the election was fair and square, or fair and square enough?
Yeah, everybody agreed. There were an awful lot of election observers there, like a potful. And everybody agreed it was free and fair. I mean, nobody has questioned that. It was free. There weren't even any protests. You know, the Fatah party was upset that they'd lost, but nobody ran around saying the cheater, you know, the pumpkin eater, that, because there wasn't any of that. In fact, there wasn't much of an opportunity to do much of that because the place was crawling with election observers.
And if I may inject one more comment, it's at this point of all conversations when we begin to talk about Hamas that I always remind people Hamas was a minor fanatical religious party that the Israelis themselves helped to promote because they wanted to give Yasser Arafat a pain in the neck.
That is correct, and it is not largely known. You're quite right. It was one of those things which backfired. Very much a clumsy analogy, I think, would be our support of the Taliban back in the days when we thought that we could use them as a bunch of good guys, or at least a bunch of guys we could work with, who would try to advance our interests while advancing their own. And people have made that sort of mistake before, but the Palestinians did have their leader, and the Israelis were interested in cutting some of the ground out from under him, and so they did support the creation of Hamas.
That's important, I think, to remind everybody that all the bad mouthing about Hamas, now all of a sudden Fatah doesn't look so bad after all.
Yeah, as a matter of fact.
They had decades to deal with them. They didn't do it, and the people said, fine, we're going to have to get somebody else. and then be careful what you ask for. You just might get it, right?
So that's always been the point, yeah. Be careful what you ask for.
So moving on then. So we're talking about the you're saying that it's kind of like the Three Stooges fishing. They get one that's too small and say they throw it back and they say, hey, go get your father. You know, no. You didn't come back with the right election result here. Go back and try it again.
Well, and that's what happened. And that is one of the reasons why working to encourage people to become Democratic is such a difficult task, because they may not even know what you're talking about. They may not be interested in learning more. An awful lot of people that you and I both know tend to be very content with the way things are. You know, that's how it's always been. That's the way it should be. And we don't need somebody else coming in to tell us how to do it. I'm a retired diplomat. Here's my thesis, simply explained. If you and I have a problem, and we sit down to talk about it, agreeing beforehand that there's no requirement to agree or come out with the proper answer, if we sit down to talk about it, there is the possibility that we can reduce it or even perhaps resolve it. And if we don't sit down to do that, we can't.
No possibility.
Yeah. So you take that chance, you sit down and say, okay, here's what we want. What do you want? I see. Okay. Yeah, no, we could. No, that's going to go. And then you walk off if you have to. And that's what, you know, human endeavor should be all about, because that way you can, on occasion, remove or reduce problems. And we should be interested in that. But, you know, they don't trust us. We have done so many things out in that part of the world over the last couple of decades that the people who live there find objectionable, that it should not really be a surprise to anyone that they're suspicious, if that's the word you want to use. Suspicious, they don't trust us, they're not sure what it is we're really after, and that makes it difficult to get done some of the things you'd like to get done.
A lot of arrogance, you know. With the in addition to trashing their democracy in 1953, you know, I always point out to people, it's not that Saddam Hussein was a bad guy for invading his neighbors. We paid him to invade Iran. It's just that he had the audacity to invade his neighbors without our permission first when he went to Kuwait, and there was 1 million casualties estimated in Iran. So you can see why they're a little bit wary of Greeks bearing gifts and Americans talking democracy. But anyhow, we're speaking with Ambassador Edward Peck. We'll be right back with him just after this. America, you are being tested, but here's where we study for it. From 1/2 mile north of Ground Zero in New York City, you are listening to INN World Report Radio with Tom Kiley. Now, daily on GCN, 4 until 5 p.m. Central. For 9 years, the alternative media activists at INN have produced national daily television news and information programming, top-of-the-hour radio news briefs, and INN World Report Radio, news talk radio that brings you real news the networks won't tell you, and all of it 100% certified neocon-free. To find out more and for details on the stories we are following, go to innworldreport.net.
The GCN Radio Network. Providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
friends. Welcome back. This is Tom Kiley, INN World Report Radio. Tom Kiley on a St. Patrick's Day, 2010. Happy St. Patrick's Day to everyone out there. And we're speaking with Ambassador Edward Peck, formerly head of mission in Iraq for these United States and a lot of other places within the Middle East as well. And so we've asked him to come on to speak about that part of the world. Ambassador Peck, if you could finish up on sort of your opinion on whether we're heading toward or away from conflict again now with Iran, and then I'd like for you to give us your take on this latest flap between Israel and the Obama State Department.
Well, on Iran, I think that the cooler heads are beginning to prevail. Who knows what might happen in the short run or all of a sudden to make that assessment invalid. But I get the very distinct impression that an awful lot of folks are concerned enough about what the results might be to keep us from attacking Iran, because it would be a catastrophe of galactic proportions with what they call, far-reaching consequences and all of those things. I mean, really, really major.
And I would agree with you, but it also seems like we're dealing with some really major boneheads. These same people that said that Iraq would be a cakewalk. And I don't see, particularly with Benjamin Netanyahu, and I know this is true, by the way, because I read it on the net in Yahoo. Okay. Anyway, that he does not seem to be a very compromising figure either, and almost like rubbing our face in it when they're heading over there, Biden and so forth, and, with the settlements and so forth.
Yes, sir.
You think those people can be kept in check? I'm starting to feel like Bay of Pigs again, where the military establishment mousetrapped President Kennedy and set up a conflict that Kennedy proscribed U.S. military action if it failed, and they thought they were just going to draw him into something, and the military went ahead sort of with a mind of its own. Israel and our own military establishment, I'm wondering, how much they're going to want to go along with these cooler heads that you're talking about.
Well, that's always the question. Will cooler heads prevail? And nobody can really know for sure. But it's kind of a feeling. I have an arrangement with our government. I don't speak to them, and they don't talk to me. And it works out very nicely for all concerned. But I have the feeling that an awful lot of folks, for example, let me pick up something which is closely related, actually. If you've read that General Petraeus recently was telling members of Congress that some of the problems that we have, some of the activities that Israel is involved in are endangering our troops. Well, you've never had anybody say that before. A lot of people knew that it was the case, but you weren't able to say that. But now that we have all of these other activities in the Middle East involving the presence of American fighting men on the ground,
a lot more exposure, right?
A lot more exposure and a great deal more dissatisfaction when they see us doing all of these things that they consider to be unacceptable. Certainly unacceptable in terms of how we talk about them being important.
You mentioned what Petraeus said. What about the comment that Brzezinski let slip out about a year or so ago that we were responsible for the airspace over Iraq, and if Israel chose to overfly Iraq, which they'd have to pretty much do to get to Iran, we may be obliged to try to shoot them down?
Well, yeah, I can't imagine anything like that taking place. But who knows what happens in times of war? That is why I've always felt very strongly the reason that Israel did not retaliate for those missiles that were fired during the first Gulf War. You remember that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Was because of a conviction that if they did that, if they took that kind of action, then the alliance in which the United States was engaged would collapse. Because, no one is going to cooperate with the United States in attacking Iraq if, at the same time, the Israelis are also attacking Iraq. And that's not going to fly out in that part of the world. So they had enough sense to realize that. They're not dumb, except in certain areas of activity. So I just have this feeling that it's going to cool, assuming that nothing really stupid happens in the very near future.
Well, I from your lips to God's ears, because it just seems like the crazies on both sides of the Middle East sort of depend on each other. And I almost get the feeling that, you know, late at night they make phone calls back and forth and say, well, whose turn is it to do something antagonistic? I did it last week. Must be your turn this week. Keep the pot boiling. So hopefully that's the way it's going to go. Now, what about let's finish up here. What's going on now with it seems to me, was this a mistake or was this really the Obama administration standing up to Benjamin Netanyahu?
No, what happened was, you know, if you read Baker's memoirs, as I think, or at least he said that every time he made a trip to Israel to work on peace plans and that kind of stuff, just as soon as he got there or while he was still there, the Israelis would announce more settlements. I mean, this has been going on for a long, long time.
Stick it in the eye just when you show up.
It's called, in French, it's called le flippage de fingre, okay?
the fougue grande.
Anyway, so they've been doing this for a long time as a means of making clear the fact that they are very happy to receive assistance from us. They're delighted that we give them budgetary support. They're happy with that. But under no circumstances do they feel required to do what we tell them. There's a parallel. You know, when I've met with leaders of Hamas and Hezbollah, they say, no, we are delighted to get things from the Iranians, but the Iranians don't tell us what to do any more than we tell Israel what to do. We can make suggestions, thank you very much, and now we're going to go ahead and do what we think is best for us. Why would it be otherwise? So the magnitude of this flap is that it was done at a what some people consider to be a fairly crucial time, you know, at right in the eye of the visiting vice president of the United States, and it got people upset. But you really must remember, and I know you'll understand this, that it is not the State Department that makes the rules. The Secretary of State does not make foreign policy. She makes an input, and then she implements it. But it is not her job to make foreign policy.
Right, a recommendation and so forth.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what I
did when I was an ambassador. You know, mm-hmm. You should do this. Okay, you're not going to do that. Well, then, but it's. I think it's misleading to blame the State Department for this flap, because the State Department is following orders, if you will. Hopefully they are, at least. They're doing what they're told and making, as we say, inputs so that other people understand what the heck it is that's involved.
Does this signal some kind of temerity, maybe, to, you know, you say this has been an ancient tradition, oh, the Americans are coming over, let's stick it in their eye, because, you know, back when it was a kind of a tacit, look the other way kind of a situation, all right, but Barack Obama made this famous speech now in Cairo, and there's a lot of expectations, people are getting a little tired of waiting on them. But how can he be seen as yet another American administration that kind of looks the other way?
Yeah, he's going to be seen like that because, you know, everything that we're talking about is controlled by politics, and we all know what politics are about. And there are people who want it to go the way it's going, and they're very powerful, and they'll probably get their way, which I think will be a disaster for everyone. And I hope I'm wrong.
I hope we're wrong, but you know, the old saying, when the guy passed away from the Middle East, and he went to heaven, and he went through the pearly gates, and he met God. And he said, God, you know, I got a question for you I always wanted to ask. And he said, what's that? And he said, God, when are they going to finally find peace in the Middle East? God looked up, rolled his eyes, and said, oh, not in my lifetime.
Yeah, I remember that story. It's too true to be funny, but it's funny.
Well, listen, thank you very much, Ambassador Peck, for your service to this country and for coming on our program, and we look forward to having you back again.
It's been an honor, sir. Thanks very much.
Thank you. All right, good friends, we'll be back tomorrow. This is Tom Crowley, INN World Report Radio, signing off.